If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Protecting homes and businesses from the whims of nature, you need more than just quality materials. You require Riverland Roofing. Licensed, insured, and certified, Riverland Roofing offers not only the assurance of excellence, but a tailored approach to your unique structural needs and budget. To learn more about what Riverland Roofing can do for you and the community, call them at 662-644-4297 or visit riverlandroofing.com.
You're locked into Talk of Champions, an Ole Miss podcast powered by Riverland Roofing and featuring Ben Garrett and Billy Embody of Rebel Grove.
Well, welcome into the very first episode of Game Runs Deep. I'm Sudha Upadhyaya. He's Ben Garrett and Benny G. It is week one of college football. We've been waiting for this, okay?
Yeah.
It feels like Christmas, and we've got a slate of games that honestly feels like you're the big house with a bunch of gifts under the tree this week.
Yeah, it's week one, and I don't really get into the whole week zero thing, do you? Like, I don't really...
It feels weird, but the older I've gotten, I've kind of understood. You know, there's always one kind of decent game, but until there's like a slate of SEC games being played, it's not week one to me. So that's why week zero, I've accepted it.
Week zero is nothing. It's kind of like the teaser, you know, the really crappy cheese sticks before you actually get the entree that you wanted.
Sure.
Right. Like week one, we're officially starting college football this week, and it is a great slate of games, right? Obviously, I think the headlining game of the weekend is Texas and Ohio State, but LSU Clemson has a legitimate case to make as well. Also, some intriguing lower level games, even though it's got marquee names like Auburn is going to be playing against Virginia Tech, a lesser Virginia Tech, Alabama against Florida State. You know, I don't think Florida State's going to be able to hang with Alabama here, but there are some intriguing storylines or at least headlining games underneath the true headliners, because I think everybody's really going to want to see what happens with Texas and Ohio State. I mean, a lot's on Arch Manning's shoulders to start, man.
No doubt. Auburn-Baylor, by the way.
Auburn-Baylor, sorry. Virginia Tech against South Carolina.
Yeah.
Tennessee, I'm trying to do all this off the dome.
You're good.
And then Tennessee against Syracuse. I've been talking about this.
There's
so
much excitement, man. It's okay. Yes. It's understandable.
Okay, good. Well, Auburn-Baylor is really fascinating for a number of reasons, mainly because, I mean, it's two head coaches in Hugh Freeze and Dave Aranda who really have to win this year. You know, they have to win. And, like, getting this win is important. Like, you don't see week one games typically like this where they could carry so much weight toward the end of the season. Like, if LSU loses to Clemson, I don't think that stops LSU from being a playoff contender.
No.
Same thing with Clemson. If Clemson loses this game, they've got, in my opinion, one of the very best quarterbacks in college football in Kate Klubnik. If they were to lose to LSU, that doesn't stop them from making the playoff as a one or two loss team. But with Auburn and Baylor, if you don't win this game, like, the path towards being in that conversation becomes really, really treacherous. So two head coaches who face a lot of pressure, a lot of question marks. But again, Texas and Ohio State, in my opinion, is, and I think it's everybody's opinion, is the headlining game of the week because it's the defending national champion. It's the Arch Manning debut as the starting quarterback for Texas. I can see Texas winning this game pretty easily, honestly, going away, mainly because I have questions about Ohio State at quarterback and the hiring of Matt Patricia as defensive coordinator. Still just like, it's just weird, Sudha. It doesn't make any sense as a fit to me. I mean, it just doesn't. I don't understand it. You go off the high of a national championship. You got everybody off your back, Ryan Day, and then you hire Matt Patricia. It's to replace Jim Knowles, who, in my opinion, is the best defensive coordinator in college football. That makes no sense, but hey, you know, live your dream. YOLO. Do your thing. I don't know if it's going to necessarily work, and I certainly think in week one against I think the overwhelming favorite, at least going into the year, to win the national championship just doesn't bode well for Ohio State. But they've still got the best player in college football in Jeremiah Smith. They're loaded from top to bottom. But what a week one. And I'm glad to be doing this with you, for Mudcat Media, for, you know, just you and I have been doing stuff together for so long.
I know.
To be able to just, like, get on here and rip it up is really, really fun. And what a way to start it off with a week one slate that looks loaded up.
No doubt about it. Yeah, first of all, we've been talking about working together again since I entered my, you know, post-college years. And no, this is really cool. We're finally getting a chance to.
Yeah, but you got to do the thing that, like, all of us idiots in Mississippi would have loved to do, call wrestling and, you know, be on ESPN and CBS. You've done all these things, and look what it's brought you back to.
No, it's great.
Your friend Ben.
It's always the ones. No, you mentioned one heck of a lineup. You started talking about Auburn-Baylor. So let's start there, okay? Because you want to talk about who this game means more for. It is 100% Hugh Freeze. The way Baylor ended last season, winning a bunch of games, I think that bodes well for them. For Auburn, Ben, there just hasn't been excitement no matter what. It feels like anytime Auburn gains any kind of momentum, whether that's on the recruiting trail, whether that was on the field at times last year, something happens or something is said or some revelation comes out that just kind of kills the vibe. You know, this offseason they were talking about the misuse of NIL money. You know what I mean? Then there's talk of, well, Freeze doesn't really, you know, he's not happy with Jackson Arnold right now. And it's no matter what they seem to do under Hugh Freeze, it's just there's something that sours there. So the pressure is certainly on him. And I mean, what is it, 11-14? I mean, the record he's got there right now, that is not okay by Auburn standards, a team that just claimed, you know, how many, like six to nine national titles or whatever. I mean, come on, Ben, this is a serious school. You know what I mean? They just overnight. Sure. They just overnight got a bunch of natties, and you can't be doing this if you're Hugh. But the pressure's certainly on him, and I think the biggest question is going to be, look, if Jackson Arnold can't beat Baylor and it falls on him and you spent all that money, that pressure week one on Freeze is already high, and it just does not get easier from there. When the SEC slate kicks in, we could be looking at a situation where he's out of there, you know, 6-7 games into the season. I mean, these guys are not playing over there.
No, they're not. And, you know, I saw Freeze at SEC Media Days, and he's dealing with some health stuff, man. You could tell he's just been going through it. So all the best to Freeze, because, look, everybody knows the story, what he's been through and things like that. But, like, no matter what you think of Freeze, typically in these type of games, his teams perform well. But, you know, where at Ole Miss, he was beating Alabama's and then losing to Memphis and teams of that nature. The Auburn, like, they're not, you're right, they don't have the patience for this. 11-14 as a record through 3 years is just not going to cut it. And, you know, a lot of that speaks to also what Auburn thinks it is comparatively. It's not the title winning team that it thinks it is. It is not the blue blood it thinks it is anymore. Honestly, teams like Ole Miss have passed Auburn in terms of overall production and wins and losses. I mean, since 2021, I think Ole Miss has the third most wins in the SEC behind only Georgia and Alabama. And yet any Auburn fan to a man would say, oh no, Ole Miss is this, you know what I mean? Which it doesn't really register and it doesn't really compute when the math ain't mathing. So it's a huge game for a number of reasons, not the least of which, yeah, Freeze has to get off on the right foot because his nuts are in a vice right now. I mean, Auburn fans are out for blood and they're expecting, like, that expectation never leaves at Auburn, regardless of whether you believe it's earned or not. I don't believe it's earned, but Auburn fans certainly do, and those are the only ones that matter. And when they overwhelmingly believe that every year they should be in the 10-11 win national championship conversation, only winning 8, only winning 7, limping into seasons like you are this year just isn't going to cut it. But the thing is, I think this Auburn team could be potentially the best one Freeze has had at Auburn without a doubt. But a college football playoff contender if things fall right. Like, I'm very bullish on what I think Jackson Arnold can be. I think Jackson Arnold, I mean, he was a five-star quarterback coming out of high school. Everybody and their mother wanted him. You know, it didn't work out at Oklahoma for a number of reasons, some of which weren't even the fault of Jackson Arnold. And I think the talent is an NFL quarterback. I think the talent, I would buy the talent before I would just dismiss him as a start over, like, you know, reclamation project at Auburn. I don't think that's the case at all. And he's got real weapons at Auburn to throw to. I mean, one of the best wide receiver corps in all of college football. I mean, Cam Coleman's an absolute stud. And Eric Singleton is a player that a lot of other SEC teams want to know. He went down the road with Ole Miss, for example, a player that they really they come in from Georgia Tech that's set to be one of the leading wide receivers, I think, in the SEC this year. So it's – but clicking it in week one against a defensive head coach in Dave Aranda is going to be difficult. I expect it to be a close game. But just all of the criticisms and all of the things we've kind of – all the boxes we've put Hugh Freeze in apply in many ways to Dave Aranda in terms of winning. Now, he doesn't have the same kind of pressure from the Auburn, you know, faithful that he does with Baylor faithful. Like, he doesn't have the exact same, like, if you don't win, we're going to fire you here. But, like, the wins and losses, the results themselves have not blown you over. They don't knock you over at Baylor. And they still have some question marks, not the least of which at quarterback. It'd be fascinating to see if, like, Walker White gets in there, or Walter White gets in there against Auburn, you know, his former team, and potentially, like, leads a touchdown drive, or leads a drive that you know, helps Baylor claim this game. But Michael Trigg, old friend for Ole Miss fans, he's the starting tight end. He's really found his place at Auburn. But, like, I don't know, do you believe in Sawyer Robertson against this Auburn team? I don't necessarily think I do. I mean, who scares you about Baylor? I think it could be a slog of a game, to be honest with you, Sue. Like, I think it could be one where two teams that don't quite know what they are, what they're going to be, just trying to figure some things out. And I don't remember what exactly the line is, but I can't imagine this game going over, you know, 44 points or something like that. I see these two teams very evenly matched, both in what they can be and the incompetency that has held them back for a couple of years.
No doubt. I think that you hit the nail on the head. I'm a little sloppy game. It's a really, let's figure out our identity game. You know what I mean? And I think it's going to be a big case for Freeze to see. There's been times that I've listened to Auburn's post practice reports, or read them, or heard Freeze, and it almost sounds like he's more excited about Deuce Knight than he is about his quarterback that he paid all that money to go get. So is that him just blowing smoke, trying to throw opponents off, or is that really how Hugh feels? You would think that it's really how he feels based on the way we've seen him operate in the past. I'm also very intrigued to see how his entire play calling scheme works. You know, all the good plays are going to be called by him, and all the, you know, that's a joke. That's a joke. Don't take that.
But also, it's like, knowing Freeze like we do.
Yeah.
What a convoluted way to go about it, and also to absolve yourself of any and all blame. But the thing about Freeze, for better or worse, he's an oversharer, right? Yeah, so maybe it's the girth and length of Deuce Knight that he likes more than Jackson Arnold. But, like, I'm a big fan of Deuce Knight. I think Deuce Knight could be legit. Yeah. However, he's a true freshman, right? Are you really wanting to stake in your put up or shut up year? You know, are you really wanting to go with Deuce Knight? Maybe he's that kind of transcendent talent that you put there back there as your quarterback and let him roll. I don't necessarily know. I mean, I necessarily think so, but you know, it's a different world, right? I mean, I think you're going to see a desperate Hugh Freeze this year. And a desperate Hugh Freeze can be dangerous, man. A desperate Hugh Freeze can win some games he's not supposed to. And if this team – I mean, if Jackson Arnold doesn't come out of the gates hot, if Jackson Arnold isn't – you know, because, yes, he was handpicked in the portal, but truly the handpicked quarterback for Hugh Freeze is Deuce Knight. If Jackson doesn't come out of the gates hot, I think the trigger they're not going to waste any time. They're going to immediately go to Deuce because he is that handpicked guy. But I just don't know if that bodes necessarily well – for Hugh Freeze's longevity at Auburn, because, I mean, riding with a true freshman in the SEC in a put-up-or-shut-up year, man, you're just asking to ride the roller coaster, right? So it's a fascinating game for what it could mean and what the win or the loss could mean for those head coaches, those respective head coaches. The losing coach, I mean, it's going to be hard to build back goodwill and faith over the course of the season it's going to be dealing with the crap that comes with being on that hot seat for weeks until there's more proof of concept, unless that one it becomes a 5-1, right? That one loss is a part of a 5-1.
I think for Freeze, if you start the season with a loss to Baylor, you almost got to beat Georgia when they come to the Plains. That's really what it comes down to. I
don't disagree. And like that's not going to set up well for you, right? Because Georgia's out for blood this year.
No doubt about it. There is no doubt about that. All right. Well, look, we started off talking about quite the biggest game, obviously, of the week, and that's Arch Manning and Texas going down to face Ohio State in the Shoe. Obviously, Ben, being from the Ole Miss circles, we're all very familiar with the Manning family. We're familiar with the way they operate. If there's one thing about Arch Manning, it's that he's going to be ready. He's not going to be unprepared for the moment. But that still doesn't mean much when you're in that hostile environment in your very first true college start. I know he had a couple starts with Quinn Ewers hurt a year ago, but this is a big one. This is the biggest game that he's going to be starting. And, you know, he's got weapons, certainly. You know, Texas has done a great job of fixing, you know, pretty much all the losses that they've had, you know, and kind of replacing some of those guys. They've got a really good recruiting class that came in as well. Ohio State on the other end also lost a lot on both offense and defense, but they quite possibly had the best offensive and defensive player in Jeremiah and obviously Caleb Downs there. So it's just a very talent-rich matchup with a lot of questions on both sides of the ball. But this all is just going to go back to Arch Manning and his ability to handle the environment, the moment, the pressure. I am in the belief that he's going to be ready to go. And I think the biggest – I've heard a lot of people talk about Arch Manning, dude. We talk about what he's got around him. The storyline just seems to be like, is he ready for the moment? Nobody's talking about Arch Manning's athleticism. And the fact that this dude can straight up ball, and if he needs to get out of the pocket and things break down, that's in part of his game that I think is going to be massive in this one. I think Arch is going to be ready. What say you?
Here's where I am on all of it. All right, first of all, Steve Spurrier wasn't wrong when he said, if Arch Manning was this transcendent quarterback, why was he backing up Quinn Ewers? He's not wrong, right? Yeah. That is a legitimate question. Look what Alabama did in the national championship game when Jalen Hurst wasn't performing. What did they do? They went to their generational guy, Tua Tagovailoa, and they won a national championship. So if Quinn Ewers was the lesser talent than Arch Manning, that's coaching malpractice by Steve Sarkisian if you don't replace him, right? So there is a legitimate question about is Arch this type of quarterback? But your point about his athleticism is cannot be questioned. That's the thing. Like, that's the difference maker. I mean, he can do it with his legs. He's got a good arm. He wasn't I know he was a 5-star-plus prospect, according to On3. I tend to think that the film, a lot of that had more to do with who he was, his last name being a Manning, than the film and the measurables and things like that as he was coming through as a recruit. Because Eli Manning was more ready-made, in my opinion, than Arch was. Peyton was even more ready-made. They didn't have recruiting stuff back when Archie was doing things, but Archie is of the four Manning quarterbacks, has a case to be by far the best of the bunch. I mean, but we just forget that because it's recency bias and all that kind of stuff. So like if he's got Archie's athleticism, yeah, this is going to be a Heisman candidate type of a quarterback because Archie was before his time. He was Michael Vick before Michael Vick. I mean, this is, Archie who was a rallying cry for Ole Miss people. And to this day, it doesn't matter if you bring up Peyton or Eli to like our dads and stuff, Archie's that guy. You know what I mean? So if Archie's more in that mold than the statue that was Eli and Peyton, first of all, yeah, he's going to be good from jump, and it's going to allow him to raise his floor because while he's over-processing early in trying to find his way as a passer, those legs are going to help him when things break down. He can just go be a football player. And so I think this game for Arch means nothing then. Go out there and play your best and rely on the talent around you. Ohio State doesn't have what you have, and that's a good starting place as far as quarterback. I think they're going to be fine eventually, but I mean, this is a debut start for Ohio State while Arch Manning has actually gotten some run before and has gotten his feet under him a little bit. So in that way, you look at everything else, and I just think Texas is going to overwhelm Ohio State because, yes, Caleb Downs is the best defensive player in college football. Jeremiah Smith is the best offensive player in football. I love Colin Simmons. I think he and Anthony Hill make for one of the best defensive duos, not just in the SEC. And if it's in the SEC, that means in college football writ large. And the skill players around Arch are going to be critically important, at least to start, you know, including Catrevion Wisner at running back. So there's a lot to like outside of just Arch and why Texas is a contender. And that's what I don't want to be lost here. It's not to run down Arch or say, or to de-emphasize how important it is for him to be good this year for their national championship hopes and beliefs, talking about Texas. But like, what makes this Texas team so good is the talent around him. I mean, he's got a captain or you know, captain the ship of one of the better rosters in college football. And that's a great starting place for a first-year starter who did get some starts when Quinn went down. But this is now his run. I mean, this is his team. He's got to be the one to take it over. But it's not just all Arch. And that athleticism, more in the mold of his grandfather than his uncle's, I think could go a long way, especially early as he gets his feet underneath him as a every-game starting quarterback. For Ohio State, it's just about the trigger man, because everything else is there. But for this game in particular, Texas is a little ahead of them because of that specific thing. Arch has gotten some run as a quarterback. He does understand the system. He's been in it for a couple years. It's his time now. But this game, I mean, both of these teams that are going to play on Saturday, Texas and Ohio State, good as they are not going to be the same teams that they will be in November. What we see of these teams in November, and like whoever loses this game, I don't think it means much of anything, because at the end of the day, both of these teams are going to be in contention for the college football playoff, if not firmly in, at worst, one or two losses. I mean, the only way it gets kind of hairy is if Arch isn't exactly who Texas thinks he is. And then you're talking about a 9-3, 8-4 kind of deal. And that's just, that seems unfathomable to me. So this opener is more about the spectacle than the result. Whoever wins, yes, it's a big win. It's a marquee win. It puts you on the best kind of starting foot that you could possibly be on. But I think you're like me, Sudu. Like, this one is more about the spectacle of college football, what you want to see to kick off the college football season, less than where Auburn and Baylor, you got two head coaches fighting for their coaching lives right now, and it starts week one. This is more of a game that, you can just enjoy the spirit of it and understand that these two teams – from a starting point will not be who they are in November, and both of them are contenders to start, but they have the chance to be so much better and so much more formidable by the time the postseason rolls around.
Yeah, it's a 1v3 matchup where obviously Ohio State started out as the favorite to win it, right? So it's certainly intriguing, and it makes you sometimes think, I don't know, what's the point of preseason polls? But if they didn't have preseason polls, guys like you and I, well, we wouldn't have anything to talk about. So that's
I disagree. We would be able to come up with our own preseason polls, which would mean just as much as true. The current one, which is not shit, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, that's where I'm at with it.
I've always felt that way. It's like, just bring it out in week three or something.
Because all preseason rankings do is allow for biases in that committee room when they start ranking college football playoff teams.
Exactly. You know,
when they start doing college football playoff rankings in the middle of the year, I mean, weeks have gone by in college football. A lot of that is based on what they think are aligning with the group think going into the year. I think you get rid of preseason rankings completely. I mean, what is there to rank? Honestly,
exactly. And it favors the blue bloods. That's really what it's about. That's why year after year, you know, I mean, obviously we've seen Notre Dame with some success recently, but year after year, no matter how bad Notre Dame was, they'd always be in the top five, top 10. We saw that with Texas until recently when Texas quote unquote came back. So I'm 100% with you. As far as Arch, I also, you know, we got to mention there are some, you know, concerns or at least questions for Ohio State in that defensive front seven. There's some just turnover, sure. Right? And we don't know what that's going to look like. But one thing I will say, you mentioned, obviously, you know, why didn't he play over Quinn? I 100% agree. I mean,
Steve Spurrier, he's the
guy. No, you're right. And a lot of people have asked that question as well. And that's true. I watched Arch Manning come. I was at the Georgia-Texas game when Arch Manning came in, and he had a couple really good plays to start that drive when he stepped in for Quinn Ewers, and everybody went, oh no, this is terrible. This is another Tua situation for Georgia. Whatever that situation. And ultimately, Georgia's front seven, their defense, their edge rushers got to Arch, and then Quinn Ewers came back into the game. I think a lot of that was probably like processing, just the speed of the game, what the defense was showing them, all those things. But you give a Manning 2 years to prepare for the starting job. Ben, this family's figured it out. They figured out how to play the quarterback position. I 100% think he's going to be ready for the moment. Does that mean it's going to be a win? We'll see. But I am a Arch Manning believer. I think he's totally ready for the moment. Okay.
And I'm not saying I'm not, but it's just like, yeah. I didn't think you were all the way there as a true believer yet. I really did. Because here's my whole beef.
Yeah.
That's what I had the conversation with Rusty Manziel at SEC Media, JD Piquel, Josh Pate, you name it. I talked to all of them about this. It has nothing to do with Arch. It's just like, how are you already crowning him when he has essentially the same resume as Austin Simmons?
Look, and here's the thing. I think that's a completely different thing. Crowning him and saying, I think he's ready for the moment, completely two different things.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right?
Yeah, it's like when you hear Paul Feinbaum just gushing, right?
Crowned him. Feinbaum is one of, but that's Feinbaum's job. You know, he has to, and then as he builds him up, and the minute Arch does something, guess who's there to take him right down? It's Paul Feinbaum. That's the name of the game. You know what I mean? That's the business for Paul. So
The game's the game.
The game's the game, man. So all right. So here we go. We are going to look at, you know, let's go LSU Clemson next, but I do want to touch on Bama. You know, this is the battle for Death Valley, right? Which one's the, I mean, let's be real. We're not the biggest LSU people, having gone to Ole Miss, but I think we all agree the real Death Valley is in Baton Rouge, considering we lose there all the time. That is Death Valley. LSU Clemson, interesting for me. I may be one of the only ones that feels this way about both of these quarterbacks. Okay. I understand Garrett Nussmeier has shown incredible ability, natural ability. He's been in that system now. There was a time where he was pushing Jaden Daniels for the starting spot a few years ago. But I'm also not in the belief that Garrett Nussmeier is just, he's the guy. I mean, that's how everybody's looking at him this year in the SEC. I want to see him play very consistently for a long period of time and win big games before I start feeling about, you know, talking about Garrett Nussmeier as a Heisman candidate or potentially the number one pick in next year's draft. Show us that consistency. Show us your ability to go into environments, tough environments, and win the game off of your arm and your ability. And the other thing is, that's how I feel about Cade Klubnik, man. I mean, there was a time when Clemson fans wanted this guy benched. Granted, he had a great season a year ago after kind of a dud against Georgia to begin the year. He really put something together. But once again, I don't know where all this... There's this insane hype around Klubnik right now. Like he could be the number one pick, or he could win the Heisman. To me, these are both prove it quarterbacks, believe it or not. A lot of people don't agree. I mean, they're already ready to say these two are going to be the best in college football this year outside of Arch. I'm not quite sure about that. I want to see really consistent performances and in big games. Now, for LSU, they're on the road. Brian Kelly, I don't think he's won an opener since he's been at LSU.
Yeah.
He didn't seem to win the first game of the season, whether that's Notre Dame, whether that's USC a year. I mean, he just can't seem to win those first games of the season. I don't know if that's something we should really look at to say, well, kid, you know, but it has been a factor and we should bring that up. But this is going to be one of those like prove it games. And like you said earlier to begin the show, more so for Clemson than for LSU, in my opinion, because of where Clemson has been the last few years, Dabo Swinney's, you know, aversion to going to the portal, and I'm going to do it my way. And he's got a pretty stacked roster, man. I mean,
he's kind of figured it out.
I mean, everybody made fun of Dabo, whether that was fair or not. And you know, we all dismissed him and like, oh, he'll never win again, but he's got a hell of a roster over there. They're very talented, but it is ultimately going to depend on whether Cade Klubnik's going to come through for them. You know what I mean? Now he's year three with the same offensive coordinator for him. That kind of consistency is going to obviously pay off for him. But to me, these are more the two prove-it quarterbacks, Nussmeier and Klubnik, than we talk about Arch. I'm more comfortable with Arch than I am with Klubnik and Nussmeier right now.
See, and I'm more comfortable with Klubnik. I think this sets up for a massive year for him. I think he's got QB1 in the NFL draft potential. Knocking Dabo all you want, the formula, at least for this year, has set up really, really well because this group of kids have been together for a while. They have legitimate talent everywhere. And, you know, Antonio Williams, wide receiver, is an NFL player. And, you know, I think one thing that needs to be mentioned about Clemson, I was talking to a dad of one of the players for Clemson, and he said what makes the Dabo's retention, you know, while so many other programs lose players left and right every single year. You know, you can speak about Ole Miss. LSU this year went crazy in the portal. Mississippi State has 50 new players on its roster, while Clemson is the complete opposite of that. They have tenured players. They did dip into the portal for needs, but for this year, it sets up kind of perfectly. And what's really led to that retention rate is and it's a credit to Dabo, is they take care of you. They make sure that one, regardless, he tells every single kid that he signs, regardless of what happens on the depth chart, you are going to graduate with a degree here. You're going to have everything you need. And man, he's had proof of concept over and over and over. And there's a real buy-in from players who play under Dabo for that loyalty and that commitment to taking care of players, not just monetarily, but also in the academic space, in the branding space, just creating that in a now completely wild, wild west environment that is college football. Clemson has become kind of like, and it didn't work for a couple of years, but has become a shining example of old school loyalty in college athletics, to where you're trying to preserve the spirit of the thing while modernizing your roster, while filling needs in the transfer portal. It was silly to not go portal at all for Dabo. And even he'll say that at this point, like, you have to, like, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face when you don't go out there and address needs when it's so easily attainable for you, especially being one of the better teams, one of the better programs in college football in Clemson. But I think it needs to be said that, like, bully for Clemson, that in a transfer culture, dominated culture that is college football these days, they have continued to preserve the spirit of the thing. And for this year, at least, has set themselves up very, very well, because Kay Klubnik has had the same consistency that other quarterbacks haven't had with his staff, with his personnel. That leads you to believe that, yeah, the heater that he finished on last year is real. And there's no reason for him to not roll into this year and be good from jump. Obviously, if LSU comes out and absolutely destroys him, there'll be legitimate criticisms and questions again for him. But I just think Clemson's set up well for this first game in particular, because I don't think LSU is what LSU is going to be at the end of the year. I'm very bullish on LSU this year.
Yeah.
I do have legitimate questions about Garrett Nussmeier, because he has legitimate knee issues, man, like degenerate knee issues that have that raise real concern about his longevity, both as a quarterback and as an accomplished starter. I love what they did in the transfer portal. They paid $18 million for their roster defensively, Whit Weeks and company. I mean, this is a good football team, and this is probably going to be, in my opinion, the most fun competitive game of week one. Not to say Texas and Ohio State won't be fun. The spectacle won't be great, but in terms of just pure ball, LSU and Clemson, man, they're about to have a dogfight. And both of these teams are going to be college football playoff teams, but I think Clemson's going to win it. And LSU, but by the end of the year, LSU is going to have the final say, because I think LSU is a 10-win team. I think they're a 10-2 team, while Clemson can be 11-1. But even still, like, I'm very bullish on Cade Klubnik. I just think he has all the tools. I think he's got all the setup to be a next level quarterback. You know, it wasn't this same kind of like hand wringing for Trevor Lawrence, right? And I just feel like they're very similar in who they are. And I think Cade Klubnik could make a real statement in week one against LSU and build a Heisman campaign around it, just because he has been supported and he has been loyalty tested with Dabo and a program in Clemson that did it a different way, but at least for this year, and we'll see how it plays out long term. We can only look at this year. It seems like that formula for Clemson, at least, absolutely nailed it. And so for Cade, he's got one of the best, if not the best, situations of any star quarterback in college football this year, because of that consistency around him, because of what he has around him that other guys just do not have or haven't had. You know, the consistency of staff and personnel, all those kind of things. Like, look at Austin Simmons at Ole Miss, right? Austin Simmons has got Caden Lee and the number one wide receiver from Oklahoma State, the number one wide receiver from Penn State, and Harrison Wallace. A lot of great talent, but, man, they haven't played a game. They haven't been in those wars together yet. Cade Klubnik's been through those wars with Antonio Williams. He's been in those situations, and that means something. What it means in this day and age remains to be seen. But for LSU Clemson, what I think will be the game of the weekend in terms of quality of football, I think Clemson comes out on top. But, man, LSU, yes, they're a legitimate question about Nuss. That team by the end of the year is going to be one of the better playing teams, in my opinion. And if they're not, man, there's going to be legitimate questions about Brian Kelly. That could turn ugly quick.
No doubt about it. No, it's got to be a big year for them, a college football playoff type year. I do agree with you. I think they can get there. Before LSU fans come for me, I understand your quarterback threw for 4,000 yards in his first year as a starter.
Great.
I know he can make every throw and he has a cannon, but you got to win the big games. You got to win the games that matter. That's always been the way I view quarterbacks. Ben knows this. There's been many quarterbacks that have come through Ole Miss that people view very favorably. And I always say, what did they do in the biggest moments when it mattered the most? And if they threw three interceptions, then I'm going to criticize them. And there's nothing wrong with that. So that's all I'm saying. As long as Nuss can go in and win these big time games, and that's the assumption we're making, right, is that every quarterback at LSU does seem to make a huge leap after their first year starting. That's the assumption, though. Now go out and prove it. And a similar situation for Klubnik. Everything is around you. You really proved to us last year as the season wore on that, hey, you might be something. You might be better than people kind of thought
got
you would
some
be.
Juice, after. Man.
You got a little juice to you, but also same situation. Start winning those big-time games. That's where you earn that nationwide respect. All right, you mentioned Ole Miss. It's obviously the team that you cover on the day-to-day basis, Ben Garrett. Not the most intriguing matchup as far as Georgia State coming to Oxford. But the Rebels are number 21. Obviously, year after year under Lane Kiffin, they've performed better historically than they have over the last however many years before Kiffin got there. I've lost track of what all those records were. They're so sad at times, Ben. But Austin Simmons, there's a lot of excitement about him. And I went on a podcast a couple months ago and anointed him the best shot for Ole Miss to have a Heisman winner since Eli Manning. The kid is a genius, graduated high school at what, 15? Already
19.
Has.
Yes.
The high school is 15. Bachelor's degree at 19. Extremely intelligent. You know, I've heard his father on different podcasts seems to come from a family that has raised him to be a leader and to carry himself in a very a good way that you want your quarterback to do. And then actually on the field, we got to see a great sample size last year. Obviously, he came in some what you would call garbage minutes against some lesser opponents. But then against Georgia, a huge drive when Jackson Dart goes out, he kind of torches that secondary. I mean, I think he might have thrown the ball three or four times. And I mean, Austin Simmons looked good. He looked comfortable coming into a big moment like that. And you want to juxtapose that against what I talked about, Arch Manning coming in against Georgia at home and how Austin Simmons looked coming in against Georgia at home. Austin Simmons looked a lot better.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So
he did. And here's the thing about that Georgia drive. He didn't have to process at all. I mean, quite literally, Lane just said, go play ball. We're going to run the offense. Go do your thing. And Austin did that. He didn't have much time at all to think. Jackson goes down. He warms up. Get in there. Do what you've been doing in practice, right? So now it's I think, one he's going to be dealing with, what he's dealt with in fall camp, what he's going to deal with early on in the season. And he doesn't have the same kind of easy run of it. You know, four cupcakes going into the SEC schedule, which didn't prepare Ole Miss last year. Austin doesn't have that. He has Georgia State, then a trip to Kentucky and Arkansas. He's going to be tested early. Overprocessing is going to be his biggest issue. The talent's there, right? I mean, he's got the talent. But as you've seen a little bit, you know, in fall camp, the overprocessing or some inaccuracy issues and stuff like that, those are going to come into play. He's not Jackson Dart yet. He's, you know, Jackson Dart, as he's shown in the preseason with the Giants, is even better then he got credit for at Ole Miss. I mean, this was a player that covered up a lot of warts for Ole Miss last year, including a complete inability to run the ball. I mean, they started a fifth-string wide receiver at running back against Florida, right, which ruined their college football playoff chances. This team, where Austin will have more cover and be allowed to not overprocess and really just run the offense and do it and kind of do what he did against Georgia, which is, hey, that you've been practicing these plays, these reads and alignments for the last handful of years, is a true running game with a three deep, at least right now, with Kewon Lacy and Damian Taylor and Logan Diggs, a wide receiver core that's going to be the strength of this team, deeper than last year's team. And last year's team produced two top four rounders in Trey Harris and Jordan Watkins. Juice Wells had a great preseason and great run with the New York Giants as an undrafted free agent. But Juice Wells was used a little bit out of position. He's more of a slot guy. They had him out wide. While, you know, this team, I think there's more of an understanding of what the roles are going to be, and this wide receiver group runs so much deeper. Because once you get past Caden Lee and DeJon Stribling and Harrison Wallace, Deuce Alexander from Wake Forest has been one of their most consistent players in fall camp. Traylon Ray, if he could be healthy, has real potential for explosion, and he's going to help them on special teams as well as a kick returner. Caleb Odom was the top prospect in Mississippi last year, signed a five-star player, and he's like, at worst, number five or six. Winston Watkins is a four-star signing that got here in the spring, and man, he's looked just so good. Dylan Alford, another freshman who's really impressed. Guys that have been on the roster for a while, like Isaiah Hartrip, have shown some good things in the preseason. They have real depth of options around him, even a tight end. Luke Haas won't be the Arkansas transfer, who's going to be such a huge part of this team eventually. He won't be back for another week or two after suffering an injury and having surgery in July. But Daquan Wright is an NFL tight end. Looks a lot like Kenny Yeboah, who's stuck around, and I think he's with the Lions right now on the practice squad. Behind him, Trace Bruckler from New Mexico, a transfer, not necessarily getting the same kind of transfer shine and publicity as others. Man, he's been invaluable for them, just a consistent performer in fall camp, without a doubt the number two tight end right now. And then there's the upside with Caleb Odom, who is now out of concussion protocol and supposed to dress for Georgia State. But as good as they think they have it and set up, like, you still got to go out there and do it, Sudu.
Like, I want to really but let's talk about the offensive line, Ben. Okay. I want to talk about the offensive line. You got a lot of returners. You picked up some guys in the portal. That is always the issue for Ole Miss. Year after year, it's always, can the offensive line protect the quarterback? Can they support the run game? Right. That to me is always the key for Ole Miss. I feel like it's, I don't know how many years it's been. I can't remember an offensive line since maybe Houston Nutt was coaching that I just felt like, boy, we got a bunch of big bodies and they can move some guys off the line and they can protect their quarterback. That's really the question. Can they give Austin Simmons enough time if he needs more time to process, if he needs to run around the pocket a little bit? Is he going to have to run for his life? You know, not to, you know, bring up Jackson Dart, and I don't think he was trying to knock Ole Miss, but when he got to the league, the first thing he said was, I've never played for an offensive line this good. Now, granted, it's an NFL offensive line. That's to be expected, but that just shows you what Dart was saying, which is like, I've never had this much time to process and, you know, have this much protection. The offensive line, Ben, that's really all I care about this year. I feel good about the skill positions. I feel good about the quarterback for Ole Miss's offense. What is the offensive line going to be like?
Which is more than fair, because Austin Simmons isn't the runner that Jackson Dart was or is, right? I mean, he's not. And where protection issues or a lack of a running game could break down, Jackson Dart can make up for it with his running ability and just how advanced he was from what he was seeing in front of him, the Florida game notwithstanding here, because that was the worst game as far as processing that Jackson Dart has had. I mean, he just was forcing things that weren't there. But he can cover a lot of Ole Miss's issues. It's going to be different this year. The offensive line as a first unit, I think, is more than good enough to go win and win big. I mean, look, they're returning their two tackles in Jaden Williams and Diego Pounds. Jaden Williams, when he's healthy, is the highest graded offensive lineman Ole Miss has. Patrick Kudus, when he's healthy, and the transfer from Arkansas, man, he's as good as they come in the SEC. Bryson Sanders is a first-year starter at center. That's the big question mark. P.J. Wilkins is a transfer from Charlotte who's had just been steady as they come ever since he's gotten here. But the depth is a legitimate issue. Delano Townsend, the transfer from UAB, we don't know when he's coming back. Devin Harper, good as he looks physically, a true freshman at tackle, he's a true freshman. No position is harder to break into, even in a rotation, than offensive line. Yeah, Georgia started two true freshmen and won a national championship a couple years ago, but is different. You know what I mean? Like, this team needs Devin Harper to be good, but, man, he's a true freshman. Same thing with Connor Howells. Is it a tell sign then that those two guys are already in the rotation as true freshmen? Does that mean that they just don't have the depth that they thought they might have after going through the portal, signing the guys that they did? I think so. I think that's a legitimate thing that they've got to figure out, because Percy Lewis transferred from Auburn. Man, he doesn't have it right now. I mean, he looks more like a body than anything else. Like, he's got some conditioning stuff he's still got to work on, things of that nature. John Wayne Oliver has come on. You know, he's a guy that's been in the program for a couple of years. He had a good spring, and he's come on as a potential rotational piece. But there's just not a lot of known knowns after those starting five, after that starting five. And all five of those guys, maybe save for P.J. Wilkins, but he got hurt earlier in fall camp, all of those guys have legitimate durability concerns, especially your best guys, Patrick Kutis and Jaden Williams. Those guys have had durability issues their entire career. So if anything happens to them, it could go sideways really quickly. You're right. That is the problem area. That is the issue. They have to stay healthy up front. And I remember back in 2012 when Hugh Freeze came to Ole Miss, his first year, it was unprecedented. They had the same starting five of the offensive line for every single game. They played all the snaps. They just didn't have a rotation. They didn't have a good enough time. I'm not saying Ole Miss doesn't have some guys that can go in. I think Devin Harper is going to be a superstar. I'm simply saying that Ole Miss needs that kind of injury luck with this group, because I don't think they even know what their true depth is yet. And asking that out of this unit is asking a lot, because Jaden Williams hasn't played a full season in 3 years. Diego Pounds has gone down with some stuff. Bryson Sanders is a first-year starter at center. Patrick Kutis, if he's not beside him to help, man, it just becomes pretty hairy pretty quickly. But that first unit, in my opinion, is more than good enough to win. But, yeah, if anything happens to anyone in that starting unit, it can get sideways pretty quick. Not to say that they don't have some upside options like a Devin Harper, but certainly the offensive line is one of the big question marks. And that's kind of what I was getting to. You know, I have real questions about Ole Miss in 2025-26. Austin Simmons, good of a starting place as he's in, is still a first-year starting quarterback replacing a record setter in Jackson Dart. The offensive line has real depth issues. And then the secondary on defense, while they have some numbers, especially after going into the spring portal after spring practices and getting guys like Ricky Fletcher, Tavoy Fagan from Clemson, who's more of a depth piece than anything right now, I don't necessarily see the star power yet. Trey Amos doesn't get enough credit for how important and dominant he was for Ole Miss last year. He controlled an entire side of the field for the Ole Miss defense. That's a player that went in the second round that's going to start for the Washington Commanders as a rookie. I mean, he was one of the highest graded players, not just on Ole Miss, but in the SEC, and was so incredibly vitally important, in my opinion, the MVP of that team last year for what they dealt with on the other side, just a rotating, you know, a revolving door of other players opposite him. So there are legitimate questions. What that means for Georgia State, not all that much, unless it's like 7-3 at halftime. Then everybody's looking around going, oh, God. You know what I mean? I think that the floor is more volatile for this team, while the ceiling is it's every bit as good as previous Lane Kiffin teams at Ole Miss, to where you can win 9-10 games and go to the college football playoff. But the volatility with the offensive line, with the secondary, I know that Pete Golding loves his front eight rotation on the defensive line as much as he did with Walter Nolan and Jared Ivey and Princely Umanmielen. But they're still all new. A lot of first-time starting guys. Cam Franklin, William Eccles, right? Xavier Harris is a top three-round draft pick. He's a monster. But is his dominance in fall camp say more about where the offensive line is, or he's just ready for that kind of an emergence, right? Those are legitimate questions about Ole Miss. Now, none of that is going to particularly be answered against Georgia State. This is a team that was 3-9 last year. Hugh Jackson is their offensive coordinator, which is just absolutely wild to me, being a football guy who's been – I mean, I just remember him, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Hugh Jackson's an incredible story, dude. But, like, they don't have the firepower to really show you your warts. But right. That second week at Kentucky, Kentucky's not as good as last year's Kentucky team. And last year's Kentucky team wasn't any good.
Listen, going to Lexington's a different story, friend. I went for the first time a year ago when I covered Georgia, Kentucky. And that campus spent, not to get too far off here, that campus, you go on, you couldn't even tell there was an SEC game going on that day. This is like 3 hours before the game, right? You know, I'm used to, I grew up in Oxford. I've been to cover Georgia for years. I mean, been all over the SEC. 3 hours before the game, you couldn't even tell me that there was a football game being played on that campus. The tailgates, meh. The whole town, the night before, eh. That stadium, I was like, oh, this is where they come. It's Kroger Field an hour before kickoff. That's where it is a raucous environment. It's going to be nuts, and it's going to be truly a great road test for our good friend Austin Simmons. Very excited to watch him play, though, Ben. I haven't been this excited about an Ole Miss quarterback in years, man.
That's ridiculous. Dexon Dart starts for your New York Giants. Is going to be the starter for your New York Giants.
I get that. I like Jackson, but with Jackson, you know, we had that kind of progression of like he came in as a transfer, and you know he had to kind of learn the system and all this stuff. Austin Simmons was Lane Kiffin's hand-picked quarterback that he got from high school. The buzz was there. This kid graduated. He was 15. Since he's been on campus, he's flashed everything, and now we're finally going to get to see it on camera or in person or wherever you're watching this thing. Very excited about it. Let's run through some of these other exciting matchups, starting with Alabama, Florida State. And I don't even want to talk about that entire matchup. I really do think Mike Norvell is in trouble at Florida State this year. His quarterback, Thomas Castellanos, calling out Bama before he even plays a snap. I mean, this is a guy who was benched at Boston College. He comes in. Now he's already – I think they're in trouble, okay? But that's a whole other story. Kalen DeBoer, his record, what he's shown throughout his time in college, I have no doubt Bama's going to be competing for the SEC this year. But it's all dependent upon what Ty Simpson does. How good do you think Ty Simpson is going to be?
That's my only big question for Alabama, because like if you look across the board, Caden Proctor is legit. I mean, he's elite. He's one of the very best at his position. Ryan Williams, Malachi Moore, they have legitimate talent across the board. This is an Alabama ready-to-roll contender. I don't know much of anything about Ty Simpson. We don't know what he could be, what he's going to be. And if he is not ready for his moment in the spotlight, who do you turn to next? Do you turn to the prize signee in this true freshman 2025 class? Maybe. But what does that set you up for a roster everywhere else that is ready to contend, that has got elite talent across the board? So, yeah, you nailed it. Ty Simpson is where it starts. I mean, he has to quickly adapt. I mean, there's some line of scrimmage instability that could be a question mark for Alabama, but I think really for them it's quite simple. How good can Ty Simpson be from jump? And if he's good, Alabama's ready to roll. They're ready to roll. And that's the beauty of like Ole Miss's schedule. There's no Alabama or Texas on their schedule. That's why like 9-3 for Ole Miss, yeah, if you don't win that many considering what your road is, even though, yeah, Kentucky is a tricky second game, that's a payback game. You have to win that. If you lose back-to-back seasons to Kentucky, if you're Lane Kiffin, there is no excuse you can make.
No.
It's completely inexplicable. So like entertaining that thought is just something you can't do.
You just
right
don't
now.
Want that to be a crutch game. You know, there, you know how there's a crutch game for every school. There's one team for Ole Miss. It's always Arkansas, no matter how good or bad Arkansas is. That's their crutch game. You don't want to add Kentucky to that list either.
Exactly.
You
right.
Start playing those games.
Meanwhile, Alabama, if Ty Simpson is good, man, there's not a game on their schedule they can't win. They have the talent everywhere else. They're legitimately elite everywhere. Kalen DeBoer, in my opinion, is one of the best in college football. And yeah, they're not. It's not because of Kalen DeBoer that they're not the Alabama that was Alabama or Nick Saban. It shows you what the world is now in college football.
Sure.
Parity reigns supreme.
Yep.
Anybody can beat anybody these days. But this Alabama roster looks like what you expect Alabama rosters to look like. And I think that, you know, if he is good, if Ty Simpson is good, there is nothing holding this team back from being a college football playoff contender. But that's a big if. That's a really big if. For Florida State, though, yeah, they're going to beat the shit out of Florida State.
Yeah, dude. I just, you know, and I covered Norvell when I was in Memphis. I like the guy, man. He was always very nice, very kind dude. You know, he has a hell of a job. He's done a hell of a job as far as what he did at Memphis and that one season at Florida State. But if this doesn't work out for him, maybe he's just one of those guys that needs to coach at a school like a Memphis. And, you know, that's not bad. You could take them to the playoff. But I just don't know, based on what we've seen, there's been one good season, and outside of that, it hasn't. And then you got to start against Bama and kind of a prove it year for you. I don't know if that bodes well for our friend Mike. Over there. All right, let's play this game. Okay, right. Syracuse plays Tennessee. There's two transfer quarterbacks here. Obviously, all eyes are on Joey Aguilar from Tennessee. Yeah. And then with UCLA, Nico Iamaliava playing Utah. Who has the better week one, Joey Aguilar or Nico Iamaliava?
I don't think Nico's starting.
Wow. Is that right?
Yeah. So I would say,
has that been announced? Did I miss this?
I don't. You might have. Look it up while I'm talking about this, because here's the thing. I have no belief in Tennessee this year.
Yeah.
I just don't see it. I see not a lackluster roster, but if you're talking about college football playoff contenders, what jumps out to you about Tennessee? What excites you about Tennessee? They have some legitimate talent, but like for me, Jermon McCoy, linebacker, first team, all SEC, great, great player. Offensively, they'll have a strong rushing attack against Tennessee. The offensive line is good, but offensively, where is the dynamicism, right? Like, where is the explosion? And is Joey Aguilar the type of trigger man that if you start to see emergence from guys like Chris Braswell, whoever it might be, right, coming on, like, is he the type of trigger man to take you to another level? I don't know. I think they're staring 8 wins in the face. I really do. I think they're staring 8 wins in the face. And I don't know, and
you saying they're staring 8 wins in the face with the situation that they're in, that's more of a credit to Josh Heupel.
Oh, yeah.
And what he can do, obviously, just making the game easier for his offense than anything. Because I do agree, man, they went from being a college football playoff team to, okay, now you're going into year two. Nico didn't have the best moments, but he has the experience. He's played in a college football playoff game. Could the Vols repeat again and make it to just like, are they going to win 7 games? Are they going to win 8 games? And I think you saying, hey, they can win 8 games, I think that's more of a credit to who their coach is than what they have around them right now. Because I do agree with you, man. It's just grim. And I've seen it in my friends who go to Tennessee. I feel bad. You know, I just feel bad. The excitement that they had, the arrogance at times that they've had, and they've been massively humbled with this entire situation with Nico. It's going to be tough. But
I
you
don't see it.
Yeah, but who do you think? Do you think so? It does look like Nico's going to start. I haven't seen anything that says he's not. But if it's Nico versus Aguilar, who looks better in week one? I mean, UCLA plays Aguilar. Utah.
I never saw it with Nico. Okay. Nico never did anything to warrant all the hoopla and whatever that he got in the offseason for the stunt they pulled. Like, he never did anything in any game that made you go, yeah, there it is. From a prospect standpoint, I mean, this is a guy that coming up, I mean, he's in the same recruiting class as Arch. And honestly, as a prospect throwing against Aaron Elite 11s and stuff like that, you're like, oh, Nico's that guy. But then when the bullets started flying, one produced, at least in his limited time, and the other one folded like a chair. And then to make the demand of, well, you got to pay me this or I got to do that, read the room. Read the room. And, I'm pretty sure that Nico's not going to start, or at least he's in a quarterback battle at UCLA. What does that say about where he's kind of fallen compared to Aguilar, who's at least done it, not necessarily against the quality of opponent that he's going to be doing it against this year. But,
sure,
yeah, I believe in terms of week one, I would put my money on Aguilar, only because, one, I don't even know if Nico's going to start. But, two, man, when has Nico ever really done anything that wowed you or made you think, well, here comes the quarterback, the 5-star plus quarterback he was coming out of high school? Yeah. I sure as hell have never seen it. Right. Not to say it can't be like that, but like, you open yourself up for this type of criticism when you handle things like he did, like he and his family did. That's just the truth.
No doubt.
You know, now the spotlight on you is more intense than it's ever been because, oh, you claim that you're this. Okay. Well, if you're not that, you're going to get dragged.
Yep.
And like, there's legitimate criticism to come from. Like, if UCLA pays you all this money and you're not that dude, what is the return on their investment? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what happens here. So I just think Aguilar is in a better place. He's in a better situation, not just for week one, but for the season overall, than Nico is. But, you know, it's unfortunate, man, because like Tennessee, you're right. I mean, that's a playoff team last year. Yep. I would argue shouldn't have been a playoff team last year, but that's neither here nor there. I don't see where they got better while other teams around them, other playoff contenders, even an Ole Miss who's replacing over 72% of its starting 22, they addressed their needs better and set themselves up to be a contender in a 12-team college football playoff more than Tennessee did. Tennessee, I think, is ripe for a step back. And, not to say that they can't bounce back immediately a year later, but like for this team, I just don't see it. And like South Carolina, Lenore Sellers, and you know, going against Virginia Tech, they're going to beat Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech's just not a good football team right now, not a good program right now.
Yeah.
But South Carolina has more upside than Tennessee does to me.
Sure.
Not just because of Lenore Sellers, but because they have legitimate star power in other places as well that excite you, right? Yeah. I mean, I just don't see the same kind of thing with Tennessee. Yet, like, Dylan Stewart is legit. I mean, he's one of the best at his position in college football. Not to even go through some skill players that, like, I'm excited about for South Carolina, some upside guys. Tennessee, not to say they don't have some of that, but not to the extent of South Carolina. So, again, I think they're staring 8 wins in the face.
Yeah.
And this opener for them, they're going to win on Saturday. I'm not, you know, I don't think they're going to lose it on Saturday, but it could be a very bumpy road for them. While Ole Miss will have a bumpy road because it's got a first-year starter, Texas will take its lumps because of a first-year starter. Tennessee will take its lumps because the roster just isn't as good as it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the world of Josh Heupel. I think he's a great coach. But this group, I think if any team, if you maybe pick any of the, quote, contenders in the SEC that are ripe for a step back, it's Tennessee, number one.
No doubt about that. I will say, shout out my guy Fran Brown at Syracuse. Covered him 1 year in Georgia. Brown Brand's the man. He's got Steve Angeli at quarterback. I think they could make it interesting. I do expect the Vols to win, but I love Fran and what he's done up there. Okay, before we go, let's touch on 2 more matchups, Ben. Notre Dame, Miami, CJ Carr starting for Notre Dame, a team that played in the college football playoff or the national championship last year. Carson Beck obviously leaving Georgia, going to Miami. Maybe in a better situation for Carson Beck. I his first year that he started at Georgia, he looked really good. He was very efficient when he had one of the better quarterbacks in the country. He does seem to find himself in a better spot in that regard at Miami. But UW Notre Dame with Marcus Freeman has been pretty dang good. So they have to go on the road to Miami. Who do you have in that matchup?
Notre Dame, because I trust Marcus Freeman. Here's the question for you. You covered Georgia and Carson Beck.
Yeah.
I think going from Cam Ward, and if you look at like what Cam, like his entire skill group that went to the NFL, got either cut or put on practice squads. Cam Ward was a transcendent quarterback for Miami.
Yeah.
Honestly, made them better than they probably even were. Carson Beck is a step down from Cam Ward. You covered him at Georgia. Tell me I'm wrong, because I don't buy Carson Beck. I think his kind of he's doing exactly what he needs to do. He does not have a future as an NFL quarterback. For a minute there, it looked like he was emerging as a potential QB1 in the NFL draft, and then, you know, it kind of all fell apart for him. He's maximizing his earning potential as he should in his prime his prime money making window, but I don't think that means much of anything for as far as like making Miami a contender. I'm going Notre Dame.
I think for Carson Beck, I think I'm higher on him than most people because of what I saw year one. His ability to process information, that was one of the biggest things for the pre-snap reads, running a pro-style offense. I mean, not the stuff Georgia's doing isn't like a lot of other college football teams where a lot of the thinking is taken out of the game for you. Beck had to do a lot of that stuff before the snap to even get. So I think that gives him an advantage, just having that ability to, you know, see the defense, change the plays, whatever, right? Call your protections. I think he has an advantage there. The other thing is, I think the schedule was pretty favorable for Miami as well. I don't think they have to play Georgia Tech this year, which is a big-time contender in the ACC. I think the pressure's off as far as it's not the week-to-week rigors of the SEC. And as long as Miami has weapons for Carson Beck to throw to that can catch the football, that was Georgia's biggest thing a year ago. They had the most dropped balls out of any receiving corps in the country a year ago. And you saw his confidence, maybe not necessarily even confidence, but just he would try to force things too much because of that. And you saw a lot of those interceptions come in because Beck thought, well, I got to do everything on my own. My receivers can't catch the ball. I think that's going to kind of be limited this year. I like Beck. I think Miami wins this game, honestly. I think it's favorable for them. Notre Dame has to go on the road. And I do see a resurgence from Beck. Whether that translates to the NFL, we'll see. But I do think you're going to see a better version of Carson Beck, closer to the one you saw when he had Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers and Marcus Roseme, Jack Saint 2 years ago, than the one last year where the Arians.
It's because he had Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers.
You got to remember this. Ladd was hurt for a lot of that year, didn't play early in the year. Bowers actually was hurt that year as well. It is Georgia, though. At the end of the day, I'm not trying to make excuses and say, well, there was nobody behind Brock. It's Georgia.
Come on.
Right. It's Georgia. But I do. I will say, like, Beck has that ability to – it's just, you know, he's got a good IQ as far as playing that quarterback position, and I do think he'll take a jump. He'll take a step up. I don't know if it's going to be the same step that he took the year that Georgia probably should have won the national title and three-peated if it wasn't for the old playoff system, but – I do think that he'll be okay at Miami. I'm going to take him. And the final one I want to close out with, Benjamin, and this one we have really nothing to go off of. We're just going to have fun with. Bill Belichick's a college football coach, man. He's going to get this on Sunday. He will face ECU, Belichick's college debut. How do you think it goes? I'm really excited about this one, dude. I'm in the belief that this could honestly maybe work out. I mean, crazy things have happened. And this is Bill Belichick, after all, you know.
When's the last time Bill Belichick was good?
Oh, gosh, I'd have to look that up.
It's been a minute. I don't buy it at all. At all. I think it's a few old NFL guys trying to cling to a forgotten time, a time long lost. I'm not saying Bill Belichick isn't the greatest NFL coach of all time, but 74-year-old Bill Belichick running North Carolina. I mean, I just don't see it.
Well, what's
they're going to lose. Like,
though? Under is it like Mac Brown, where they win 8-9 games? You're like, okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, but under Mac, it wasn't enough.
No, I understand.
UNC fans said it wasn't enough under Mac, but maybe because, you know, it's the Bill Belichick shine in the whole, you know, the hooded mastermind. Maybe he gets a little bit more run, but like, I think you're staring at the, you fired Mac Brown to replace him with a, you know, better Mac Brown.
Yeah. Now, well, I don't know. Mac, you can make the argument that Mac Brown is, better college coach. Is it? I mean, it depends
on
the
Bill's never even done it here. He's never done it in college. Like, this is, it's bizarre. And I don't expect it to – I don't think it's ever going to be ugly. It's going to be competency across the board. And maybe that's all that you really want at UNC. You know, maybe you just are more worried about the Jordan brand and being UNC than winning college football playoff games. But, like, if you're putting – I would take Dabo over Bill Belichick. I would take Kirby over Bill Belichick. I'd take Lane Kiffin against Bill Belichick. I would take – because they understand this and this environment better than him. And, I mean – I'm sorry. I don't understand the fit. I didn't understand. Like, when they got rid of Mac Brown, it was for the assumption that they wanted to modernize their program, and then you went in the most regressive way possible.
Well, they got Jordan Hudson, Ben. They have a young 20-year-old running that program. I don't know why you would even.
If you can be a millionaire and get it when you can, man, all I'm saying. But for this weekend, I don't know what TCU is going to be. TCU is either – it's always their playoff team or they're 4-8. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know what this TCU team is going to look like. I'm kind of completely wait and see with them. TCU can easily blow the doors off of a team like North Carolina, especially if they're as messy as I think they can be. I think North Carolina is winning this weekend, but and there's going to be just constant gushing and ESPN coverage about Bill Belichick's win over TCU in week one. And then it's going to be like 4-8. Or 5-7. I mean, I think they could win 8 games. I do. I haven't looked at the schedule particularly hard. But, you know, if you're asking me if the setup they have currently, which is they're doing a whole NFL organization structure, which is in college football in this day and age, not a bad way to go about it.
Most teams have that now, right?
Yeah, general managers and like the guys making the most money are the ones that don't have anything to do with the X's and O's. Right. I get it. Great way to go about it. I just don't know if I trust 74-year-old Bill Belichick, whose last like 3 first-round picks with the New England Patriots didn't work out. You know what I mean? Like, I don't trust his player procurement, talent procurement strategy. I believe it is regressive. I don't think he has the same eye as he used to. Not to say it won't necessarily work out well enough, 8 wins, but if you're asking Bill Belichick to take you to the promised land in 2025 at North Carolina, forgive me if I'm a bit skeptical.
All right, your biggest the guy that becomes the main Heisman contender after week one, or just maybe solidifies it if they're already a contender coming into the season.
Cade Klubnik.
Okay, you love you some Klubnik. I don't. Okay, interesting. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm just the jury's out for that. What will be the biggest upset of week one, you think?
Oh man, Syracuse over Tennessee. No, I think Tennessee's going to win that game. I really do. But like that's what I'd be looking for.
Okay.
Right. I mean, if whoever wins Texas or Ohio State, the loser, you're not thinking, oh, what an upset that was. No. Same thing with LSU and Clemson.
Yeah.
Now, if Florida State upset Alabama, which no chance, but if they did.
I think that would probably qualify as the biggest upset, right?
I think it's less about who's the big. I don't think we're going to see I hope I'm proven wrong. I hope on Monday, like I'm going, oh, God, I look like an idiot. And there's just upsets galore. this weekend. I think it's more about just the quality of the matchups and the spectacle of the return of college football than what potential upsets there are. Because honestly, I don't really see that happening. You know what I mean? I just don't know who I would buy at this point. And if it were Georgia State over Ole Miss, oh my gosh, that's a totally different conversation. It's not going to happen. I think Ole Miss is like 44-point favorites. I don't know if Ole Miss is going to whoop them by 40 points, but I just don't see a game out there that, like, I'm like you. I'm a big Fran Brown truther, man. Fran Brown is that dude. And I just have a question about the trigger, man. You know, McCord's not there anymore, and he was so good for Syracuse. I think Tennessee is one of those that's on, quote, upset watch, but even Syracuse beating Tennessee wouldn't necessarily be an upset, only because, like, they're in similar competitive trajectories right now. Tennessee's the better program, a better team, but that's one, like, those are what you're looking for, teams that could get you, and you're kind of in this transitional phase. So maybe that one, but I just don't see it. Would TCU beating UNC be considered an upset?
I don't think so. I mean, TCU's coming back. I mean, they have Sonny Dykes. They put together a pretty good year, right? They won like 8 games. I think their quarterback had around 4,000 passing yards. They should have a pretty good offense this year again. I think the questions for them are probably on defense. But no, I don't think you could say that's an upset. All right, since you cover Ole Miss, give me Austin Simmons' stat line when it's all said and done on Saturday.
He's going to be 18 for 24 for 262 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an interception.
Okay. There you have it.
Does that work?
That works.
I think that works. And see, now all I'm doing is like looking at upsets on BetMGM. I'm like, I wonder what could actually be legit, you know? And I don't see anything I'm falling in love with.
There's not really much. I mean, you know, I don't know. Nebraska plays Cincinnati. I don't know if neither one of those teams are ranked.
Sudu, we haven't said it. I know we got to go, but we haven't said it.
What's that?
Southern Miss is plus 11.5 against Mississippi State at home.
Oh, goodness.
They got all of Marshall's roster from last year. Marshall won 8 games.
That's right. Oh, I don't know. I'd put my money on Jeff Lebby this year.
Toledo's only a 7.5-point underdog against Kentucky.
Okay.
Syracuse is actually a 14-point underdog against Tennessee.
That would be a big time upset.
Yeah.
Well, Ben Garrett, you can follow his work on the shouted out your old brand.
Hey, Rebel still Bro. Spirit Ben on Twitter, baby.
Spirit Ben on Twitter, obviously. Go to on3rebelgrove.com. Is that the new the URL? Okay. I know there's been
sign up for $1 just today to hear the ramblings of your friendly, stupid Ginger Shrek over here.
It's going to be incredible. And of course, follow Mudcat Media on all social media platforms as well. I'm Sudu TV on Twitter. Benjamin, it's been real. Maybe I'll see you in Oxford this Saturday, TBD. But take care, my friend. It's going to be a good first week.
Love you, buddy. Enjoyed it.
Yes, sir. See ya.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.